We're being recorded. Good evening. Please join me in saying the Anabekoach. Anabekoach. Gedula Chemincha Tati Tserura. Alephet Gimel, Yud Taf Tzadik. The gematria of these six letters is 506, the same gematria as the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love. The two letters of the month are Ayin, which created the month of Tevet, and the constellation Gedi, Capricorn, and the Bet, which created the planet Saturn. And for information purposes, the month of Shvat, which starts Friday night, will also use the first verse, but the letters will change to Tzadi and Bet instead of Ayin and Bet. And we'll discuss that next week. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayim Sintet Nun. Kufre Shayim Sintet Nun spells two Hebrew words, Kras Satan, tear up the negativity, tear up Satan. The six letters can be rearranged to spell two other words, Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates, and it's a reminder to us to guard what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we smell. Put a guard on all of the gates, which is the entryway. The gates are the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which is the entryway to the negative forces. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha kevavat shamren. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Nun gimel dalet has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, sustenance, fulfillments from what you lack. These three letters can be used as a meditation to fulfill your lacks, to cause them, the fulfillment to manifest in your life. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that we can utilize to take back the energy we've given to the other side, to the negative side, through our mistakes. Barchem tacharem rachamei sidkatcha tamid gamlem. Bet tetresh tzadi taf gimel. Chasin kadosh biro tufa nael adatach. Chet kuf bet tet nunayim. Yachid ge'e lamcha p'nei zokre kedushatach. Yud Gimel Lamed, Hei Zayin Kuf. This sequence can be utilized to help spread the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yo de times 10 times 10. 10 times 10, or 100, is a perfect number. It represents the 10 Sephirot fulfilled within the 10 Sephirot. 4 represents the 4 worlds. The last 4 letters have a gematria of 506, the same as the gematria of the first verse. The letters Vav Tzadi Yud Tav, 506, and connects us to unconditional love, Ahavatinam. And it teaches us that the creative process starts with love and proceeds step by step to its manifestation, preferably with love. Without love, we have a disconnection. We have the room for the mistakes. We have room for the negativity to enter. If we have the consciousness of love step by step, all of our manifestations, all that we bring into our life, will be in a positive way. The last line we say in a whisper, which we refer to as silently, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of sharing. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vaed. I'm now going to read from the Zohar a verse to bring that energy into this class. I'm reading from the portion of Vayera, this week's portion, verse 21 in the section Visible and Invisible Colors. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunenehu. Rabbi Shimon Chava Yativ Yoma Had Beribi Elazar Bere Beribi Yaba Ime. Amar Rabbi Elazar Chai Kara Diktiv Veera El Avraham El Yitzhak Ve El Yaakov the Gomer. Mahu Veera the Adaber Mibae Le Amar Le Elazar Beribi Raza Ila'a Ihu. One day Rabbi Shimon was sitting with his son Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Elazar said in the passage, "And I appeared to Avraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov." Why is "and I appeared" stated? It should state "and I spoke." Rabbi Shimon said to him, "Elazar, my son, this is a very high secret. The verse that starts out Vayera, the parasha of this week, starts out with the words, "and I appeared." It's God speaking to Moshe, answering his question from last week. "God, you said you were going to help the people, you're going to redeem the people, and all you've done is make it worse for them. Nothing has truly happened except it's worse." And Moses' words to God were not real, positive, or complimentary. And so the questions are asked throughout this. How could these words be said this way by Moshe to God? How can you speak to God like that? And here the question is being asked, why does it talk about appearance? "And I appeared to them by the name of El Shaddai, not by the name of Hashem." And Rabbi Shimon is saying that it's a high secret, which is the code word in the Zohar for an explanation. But why does it not say, "I spoke to them"? Perhaps the patriarchs were on a level, and the generation that they lived in were on a level, that literally they could see Hashem. What do I mean, see Hashem? Hashem can't be seen. But his essence, and the way we receive the messages from Hashem, are on various levels of the various sephirot. What are those levels? One of those levels is the level of eyes, the level of appearance. Some of those levels is the level of psychic levels, archetypes, which the psychologists use. So people see, not in words, people see in images. And this is the idea of this big secret, which this section will go on to explain, that some things are to be seen to be revealed, and some things are to be concealed. Why that is part of the spiritual laws. Last week, we spoke about why study Kabbalah, and I was asked the question of how do you study Kabbalah? And I have thought about that. I actually answered it in this week's email. I gave you a list of approximately 8 to 10 items to do to increase your connection to the study. But the real essence is to start to connect to the Hebrew letters. You connect to the Hebrew letters with saying the Ana Bekoach. You connect to the Hebrew letters by connecting to the Zohar, whether it's directly through the printed books or through the daily email that I recommend. You connect to the Hebrew letters by scanning the 72 names of God. You connect to the Hebrew letters by connecting to the words Vadai, which means certainty. You connect to the Hebrew letters with the word Shalom, which means completeness as well as peace, and many other things. You connect to the Hebrew letters when you start to say the morning blessings, when you start to say the blessings over food. Each step on your path to connect to Kabbalah is a process of strengthening your connection to the letters. That's why the class of the Tree of Life, we speak of the Sephirot themselves, but we also speak of the letters that represent the lines between the Sephirot. When I say represent, they're channels. The letters are channels to metaphysical energy. There are 22 Hebrew letters representing 22 metaphysical energy. What's a metaphysical energy? Love is a metaphysical energy. Peace is a metaphysical energy. Air is a metaphysical energy. Once you understand what that essence, source, seed level of that thing is, meaning you understand the letters, you are able to grow and expand your vessel and your ability to connect and become closer to Hashem. This is the how to learn Kabbalah. Historically, in the past, the Jewish people would go to their rabbis, and they would go to their rabbis who never studied business, never studied anything but Torah. And yet, all through the decades and the centuries of our history, we have students of the Talmud, we have wise men, we have rabbis who were very much participating in the development of science, in the expansion of mathematics and its proofs, very much involved with this, because everything is in the Torah. When you study the Torah, you receive everything. I have once been asked, how do I know what I know? And the answer is, it's experience. But the experience comes from the study of the Zohar, because along with those letters comes the ability to connect to your intuitive level, which gives you the righteous way to act, meaning the right way to act, the right action to take. We are disconnected in the Western world from our intuitive self. We speak about women being more intuitive to men, but that's not correct according to Kabbalah. It's just that men have been disconnected from their intuitive self. And women, while more intuitive on their surface, are not on a balanced well either. It takes a balance, the intuitive and the logical, to know what is right to do. Starting to connect to the Hebrew letters through the techniques that I've taught, the tools of Kabbalah, the Anabah Koach, the Zohar, hearing the Torah on Shabbat, the 72 names of God, the individual source words, Bedai, Shalom, and others. This is how to connect. This is how to study Kabbalah. Last week we discussed why. I just answered how. Before I go on to tonight's class, does anybody have any questions?
Why the book of the Zohar is big in that particular? How do we know? How do we know what to read every day? Because so far what I've been doing after the prayers is just, you know, getting any Zohar and just opening up and scanning and reading.
The question that's being asked, in case it didn't get recorded, is how do you know what to read within the Zohar? How do you know what to scan within the Zohar? And there are different printings of the Zohar. The Zohar is written in Aramaic, the original language. It was written by Rabbi Abba, who our verse today spoke about. Rabbi Abba was given long life. He lived approximately 600 years. He was given long life in order to record and write down the teachings of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar. All this time that he was writing this down, living in Israel, in the land, he was all of these teachings were kept secret. So some people have a book that just has Aramaic. The Kabbalah Center printed a translation of the Aramaic Zohar into Hebrew, along with a commentary by Rabbi Ashlag. That book, that set of 22 Hebrew volumes, has a connection. And then the Kabbalah Center also translated the Zohar. Actually, they translated that Hebrew section, commentary, into the English. So the answer to your question is, which sets of books are you using?
The commentary.
Okay, so you're talking about the brown set with the English translation of the Aramaic verses. Okay, the Zohar is structured in different ways. There are five components of the Zohar. Those components are intermixed, but they all follow the portions of the week that are read in the Torah. Every week we read a portion of the five books of Moses. Right now, we're reading the portion of Vayera, which is in the book of Shemot, the book of Exodus. Vayera can be looked up if you purchase a Tanakh for $30 to $50. If you purchase a Hebrew Bible, it's broken down section by section, parasha by parasha. And you can just once you know the name of the parasha, on the edge of these books, you'll find that name. And that's how you know which to read. For example, I'm looking at, and the verse I read to you today is from Book 8, which on the bottom has the two words Shemot and Vayera. So it's really very simple once you understand the parasha. You can also take it from my emails, because usually in the first part of my email, I tell you the portion of the week. Perhaps I should also add chapter and verse, and that might be easy, and as I'm thinking about it now, I may start to do that. But be that as it may, the easiest way is to follow it. So next week, starting Saturday night, take out Book 9. And then week by week, where it gets adjusted is during the holidays, because there are some Shabbats that is on within a holiday, like Sukkot or Pesach, where we don't read the portion, we read another reading, and so you can get off step by doing that. But usually it's very easy, and from now until the end of March, it's going to be week by week. Are there any other questions? The question is the intuitive always connected to the logical? I think the easiest way to answer the question is to tell you that they are never connected. The intuitive is the cause, the logical is the effect. The intuitive is chachma, is the level of wisdom. The logical is the level of bina, the level of understanding. Every human action starts with an intuitive command, an intuitive direction. Every human action. You sit, I'm going to say the following sentence. I'm going to say the following sentence. That's the sentence I'm going to say. So all of you get confused and not confused. The words I'm going to say, I am going to say the following sentence. How come I started with I? How come I started I am? Why am I choosing these words to say? When I say the sentence, do I think about saying all of the words or even each word? Or I start with the first word and the rest flows? I normally I just say the sentence, but I'm asking you to look at why I say that sentence. Why I say that sentence is an intuitive direction from my higher soul. And that intuitive direction is an effect of my last lifetime, which is the soul, the higher soul, that isn't in my body, is aware of, and is sending me to do certain actions that relate to my correction. Now, let me finish the explanation, because I haven't even gotten there. That's the intuitive cause. Every action we do starts with that intuitive cause. But now our ego comes into play and says, I have to have a logical reason for why I said that sentence. So why did I say that sentence? I wanted to. It's scientifically correct. It's whatever logical explanation we put on the action that I do is for my ego to understand and be comfortable with why I do things. But ultimately, you are put in a position every second of every day to meet people or be in a situation where you can make your correction with those people or with those situations. You're put in that situation because of the intuitive directions that your higher soul is giving you. Understanding or logic is now your justification for those actions. As an example, I'll use a call I just got. one of my students who's had a lot of problems asked somebody to call me because she's not able to call herself. She wants to change her name because that will change her luck. She wants to know what name she should change it to, and she's given this man a few choices for him to ask me and decide what should be her name. Okay? Now, obviously there's a correction between she and I, or the question wouldn't be asked. Obviously there's now a third person involved, because this man is the channel for this information in question. What's my reaction? My reaction is that intuitive direction. That's what I have to stop and do restriction. I have to understand what's the cause of it. Well, it's a tikkun, but what is the tikkun to be? What's the best thing for her? Where's my sharing consciousness versus my receiving consciousness? Your question was, is the intuitive and the logical always connected? And the answer is, they're always not connected. Yet, the intuitive has to be brought down to the logical in order for you to manifest it in your life. You cannot take the intuitive flash of insight and make it happen directly. It's too much energy. There's no vessel in the physical world that can handle what you perceive in that flash. And that's true in all aspects. You must understand it. In the Sefer Yetzirah, it talks about running and returning. Run with the intuitive level. Run with it to the logical and bring it down and understand it, put form on it, expand on it, give some logic to it, but always run back to the intuitive. Run and return. Constantly run and return. Know it's intuitive, but bring it to the level of logic. We have two brains, right and left. There is a part of the brain that crosses over and makes the connection between the two. But for the most part, they are separate. There is a small portion that connects them. But for the most part, they are two different things. You cannot always listen to your intuitive, and you cannot always listen to your logic. My daughter had a very important decision she wanted to make. She'd been taught by me and her mother and others, right on the list, pros and cons. And it'll become clear to you once you eliminate the emotion of involved with the pros and cons. The intuitive level will say, I've looked at the pros and cons, but I want to do this anyway. It's clear that I shouldn't do it, but I want to do it anyway. You cannot always follow logic. You cannot always follow intuitive. The purpose of this life is to learn how to balance the two.
So in that sense, they're connected?
In that sense, they're connected. But if you perceive them as connected,
right,
they're clearly different, and they need to understand their relationship. Are there any other questions?
Like the heart and the mind.
It's exactly like the heart and the mind. And in Kabbalah, we speak of the mind of the heart and the heart of the mind. And these are terms that are very difficult to understand.
What, there's seven minds in the heart?
I was going to talk about reincarnation tonight, but we're halfway through the class with these questions, which is great. So I think I want to talk about a little shorter subject.
Let's talk about reincarnation.
Well, we can do that. We can talk about reincarnation and then and complete it next week. So you want to talk about reincarnation? Okay.
Yeah.
Reincarnation. It's called Gilgul. which comes from the root Gilgul, which means wheel. Reincarnation, the term is Gilgulim, wheels. Why is this a tool of the system of spiritual laws? In the basic class, which I guess I'm going to review, we start the discussion of Gilgul to talk, we ask the question, why do people die? Because reincarnation is an effect of someone having died. So why do people die? There are only three reasons why people die. And most students have great difficulty accepting that statement. There are only three reasons why people die. And before the sin of Adam, it was not necessary to die. Adam was not supposed to die. They did a sin, whatever that is means, because we're not going to go into what the word sin, which is different in Western discussions than in Hebrew. People die because they have completed their task in this world. What is an indication of someone having completed their task? They die in their sleep. They die without pain and suffering. They die in peace. They die. The highest level is called the kiss of Hashem. Moshe and Aaron and Miriam died in this way. Your soul leaves your body, and there's no pain, there's no discomfort. You just leave. And those of us left in the world have a mitzvah to take care of your body, to bury your body, to deal with it and put it in the ground. That is one reason why people die. Another reason people die is they've completed their amount of time that they were given to complete their job in this world, their task, their tikkun in this world. The Bible, the Torah, tells us we have 120 years to do that. This was from the time of Moses. Prior to Moses, people could live longer years than that. If we analyze the statistics science gives us, around the 1800s, middle of the 1800s, the average lifespan was 30, 35 years. It's now somewhere between 75 and 85. What is causing it to rise up? The medical science will tell you it's their improvement in hygiene and their improvement in the medical medicines and all of these kinds of things. But statistically, you can lower your cholesterol, but the overall rate of death does not change. If people don't die of a heart attack, they will die of a car accident, God forbid. If people don't die of a heart attack, they will die of a home accident, God forbid. People are given so much time in this world. Their actions can detract from that time. Their actions can lengthen that time back up, but ultimately, the amount of time that a soul is given to complete its correction in this world is one lifetime. Hashem has changed that through His mercy and lengthened that to be different lifetimes. That's what the Gilgul represents. That's what the wheel represents. We'll talk about that because I've confused you and I've taken you off the subject. Subject is, why do people die? They die because needed their correction. They die because they've met the limit of time that they were given to achieve that in this lifetime. And the third reason is due to Hashem's mercy. Hashem, knowing the future, knowing the levels of people, knowing people, sees that by leaving this person in the world, they will only continue to veil themselves through their actions. Their free choice will always be to veil themselves in this body and this soul combination. So through his mercy, he takes them out early. Why does he take them out early? Because there's no reason to veil if there's no lessons that are going to be learned by the veiling. So he takes people out. Those are the three reasons why people die. The majority of our generations have died because of the third reason. In other statements that the Zohar has made, is that 90%+ of people who die before their time die because of Lashon Evil Eye, meaning that they've done actions that make them vulnerable to losing life force energy, and the losing of life force energy detracts from your years in this world. If you're given life force energy for 120 years and you lose 10% of that, you're only going to live to be 108. If you lose 20% of that, you're going to only live to be 96, and so forth. Even at an 80-year level, it's 25 to 28% of the total life force energy has been lost. Since the year 2000, we changed paradigms. The year 2000 was a shift, a potential shift, where we can choose not to die. We can bring back and recreate that life force energy that we've lost. How do you do that? Is begin to study Kabbalah, and eventually you can arrive at a level that you're able to do that. It's not an easy process to learn, but it is an easy process to connect to and start the path of. So we have this system that there are three reasons why people die, and God, in seeing that people will not complete their correction generally in one lifetime, has given us this system of laws relating to reincarnation that allows souls to come back. Every soul must complete its tikkun. However long it takes that soul, however long it takes that soul to complete its tikkun, is how long the world will last. Except God put a limit on it of 7,000 years, actually 6,000 years.
Why are we obsessed on returning within the same life of period to see how this person that we left in our life is doing? And we've known about individuals who just come back, can describe where they lived and their husband and their children. And, you know, they have an obsession of returning.
Well, you're asking about people who remember who they were last lifetime. The reason that we forget who we are last lifetime is out of God's mercy. If you knew who you were last lifetime, if you know what you did wrong last lifetime, there's no effort in correcting it. So we need to forget who we were and what we came here to do. Because that's the only way you're given free choice. That's the only way you can get points, for lack of a better description, of removing bread of shame. If I know that I should be at a certain corner next Tuesday to hand a homeless man a dollar because that's my tikkun with him, and that's the only time in this lifetime that we will come together, I know I'm supposed to be there. There's no effort in removing that. If God says to me, or I remember, last lifetime I didn't give him the dollar and I have to do that because that is my correction. If I know that in advance, I'm going to make it happen. There's no free choice in that. Somebody's told me very clearly, this is what you need to do. There's no removal of bread of shame in that because there's no effort to it. The free choice is, what do I do? I don't know what to do. That's when you remove bread of shame. That's when you correct yourself. This life is veiled. We do not see cause and effect so that we can have free choice. Free choice to choose good or choose evil. To choose to be sharing or to choose to have the consciousness of selfishness. The removing and the changing of selfishness to sharing, that removes bread of shame. But it cannot be done in a world where you see cause and effect. It can only be done in a world where it's veiled. That's why. So when we have people who come with this compulsion, they remember that they were this person in that lifetime, is a correction for them. They are being given this gift of sight for a reason. And it's going to be different for each one of them. But that's the idea of why they remember and we don't. Rabbi Isaac Luria teaches that in order to complete your correction, you must learn what you did in your last lifetime. That's part of that is through your name, part of that is through your astrology, part of that is just living life. You will learn what you did wrong. When you look back on your life from 120 years, you'll see the patterns. Just as the therapists talk about patterns now, the people you met in your 20s, they're different names and they're different looks, but they're the same people you met in your 30s. And they're the same people you met in your 40s. Different names, different looks, different human beings, but they all had the same correction to you. They all had the same opportunity for you to change yourself. But we don't see that pattern in our day-to-day life. What Kabbalah helps you do is step back and see these patterns so that you can start to understand cause and effect in a world where it's impossible to see cause and effect. Did I answer your question or confuse you?
No.
Okay. We all have heard stories of people who've lived after death or what is it called? They died and came back. And they talk about going through the tunnel, seeing the light, being given a court judgment. And some of them are given a choice whether to come back or not, and some are told other things. But they all speak about this process of the soul leaving the body, going towards the light, and then either being sent back or continuing on and staying dead. They don't speak about that, but that's the implication. The reason that that happens is that's the description that the Zohar has given us. These people are dead. These people's soul has left their body. These people's soul are being judged, and they're being given an opportunity to change. And when they come back, they are changed. It's not the same soul who comes back into that same body. It's a changed soul. It was cleansed of something and came back through this process of death, which is why we have death. What are the three reasons that people die? I gave you the explanation. But why do we have to have death? To correct the sin of Adam and Eve. It brought death into the world. Why do we have to have death? Because the process of death cleanses an aspect of bread of shame. That's what the sin of Adam and Eve is dealing with. Now, our souls have certain spiritual laws to follow. They come into this world, and there are five levels of soul. Nefesh, which is the life force energy, and which is in the blood of a human being, in the blood of an animal. Every blood has a nefesh soul, life force energy. That's why the blood is both red and white. It has white cells, which is the immune system, and red for the oxygen feeding of the cells. Red represents the left column, and right represents the right column. The blood has our soul. Any blood you eat is your soul, is the soul of whatever thing that blood came from. And that's why we have a prohibition against eating the blood of animals in our kashrut laws, because we don't want the soul of this animal to come into our human body, because it will draw our human body to a lower level of consciousness. So we eat animals, but we eat them without the blood, or as removing as much blood as possible. The nefesh is the lowest level. It is the life force energy. The ruach comes into the body potentially at the age of 13. The ruach is the only first time that the child can choose to share or not. That's a level of consciousness of the ruach level. The neshama comes into the body potentially at the age of 20. There are two parts of the soul, the chaya and the yechida, that are outside the body. The Talmud speaks about the four amot of our aura. They don't call it an aura in the Talmud, but they're describing our aura. A healthy human being has 88 inches in front of them and 88 inches behind them, to their right and to their left, that their soul inhabits. Now, it's absurd to talk about 88 inches. How can I talk about a physical location of something that I can't see? Our aura is part of our soul. It's those two higher levels. Whenever any other soul comes into that 88-inch space, it's interacting with our soul. When you hug you, it's even that much closer, that much more intense. But on the level of driving down the street, the car to your left, 88 inches, has another human being. Their aura and your aura is interacting. meaning your souls are exchanging energy. We don't think in those terms. We don't perceive things in those terms. But ultimately, we have these five levels of soul, and for the most part, the upper two levels never enter the body. They represent our connection to our unconscious. They represent what is sending us those motivations that we talked about when we talked about the intuitive levels. Now, we have these five levels of soul, and we have 613 parts of our body. 248 parts, like a heart, an arm, a wrist, a brain, a head, a nose, an eye. And we have 365 sinews, like the artery that runs from the femoral artery or the aorta artery or the ligament that connects the two parts, two muscles together, or the ligament that connects a muscle to a bone. These sinews, they're called. There's 365 of them. There are 613 parts of our body. Each of those have five levels of soul. Each of those can be from different entities, because there is a process of connection, of correction that takes place. The correction of the lowest level takes place in five steps called the same names, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida. When the Nefesh is completed, the Ruach has the opportunity to be corrected. Until that time, there is no Ruach in that body. But once the Ruach, the Nefesh, is corrected completely, it's achieved its full correction, the Ruach comes into the body, and now the body has, this person has a chance to correct the Ruach. But what if he runs out of time in this lifetime, as most of us do? The person dies, and the spiritual law is that that Nefesh cannot come back with that same Ruach. That Nefesh becomes a support for another Ruach to do its completion, correction, in the next body. So the idea is that in any given part of the bodies, the Nefesh can be from a totally different soul. And if it's a second or later lifetime, will definitely be from a totally different soul. The Ruach will use this Nefesh, and this relationship is called Ger, stranger. And on the physical level, the Torah commands us, God doesn't command us, but suggests that we treat the orphan, the widow, and the ger in a better way than we typically do. The orphan and the widow and the ger are terms from the reincarnation level, as well as terms in the physical level of what we typically understand it. The ger is a convert. A ger in the level of soul, in the level of Gilgulim, in reincarnation, a ger represents a nefesh, which has completed itself and is now supporting a ruach in its process of being completed in a different body than it was in originally. While this seems a little complex, it is part of the laws of reincarnation that we can study. It's also why my teachers would say to me, so what? What do I need to even know this for? How is this going to help me reach my tikkun? It's the understanding that your tikkun can be different for every part of the body, for every part of the soul of that part of the body. That's why going around about your life, which means going about being presented with choices, being put in positions to make a choice, going about that process of life, of living, unconsciously, meaning, let's just do it. I don't have to think about it. I'll just do the same reaction that I always do. I'm hungry, I'll go get food. Doing that is putting a veil. And the veil is causing you to receive chaos back into your life because your consciousness is creating that pain. What Kabbalah helps us achieve is the awakening that causes us to try and stop our reaction. Eventually, we learn to reach the level where our reaction is to stop our reaction. This is when we can start to see the patterns of the wheels, of the souls, of the parts of the soul within our life, where we can start to see that the action of taking food that is unhealthy, I'm eating when I'm not hungry. I'll use that as an example. I sit down at a table, or maybe I lie down on the couch and I start to eat. Look at the parts of the body that are involved in that action. The hand which reached for the food, the mouth that took the food in, the saliva glands that caused it to start to digest, the stomach and digestive system. And that's just a few of the parts. What about the legs that took me to the table where I pick up the food? All of those parts of the body are involved in the correction of choosing to restrict the eating of that food or continuing rotely to eat the food like all the rest of the day, earlier days of my life. That's the reason we learn the laws of reincarnation in Kabbalah. Not because I need to be wise. Not because I'm so great that I know this information. But because it helps me achieve a level of restriction. When I see how beautiful the world is, how amazing it is that God created the world the way he did, with both the level of the body and the level of the soul, both dealing with reincarnation on different ways and different aspects, it gives me an opportunity to become in awe of the Creator. All of this complexity, it is not really complex, it's following a simple law. It's an amazing revelation. And I'm going to leave the class to continue next week for additional information. Does anybody have any questions before we leave?
How does metaphysical word come?
Well, there's metaphorical stories, Midrashim, that tells us that God speaks to the Nefesh and tells it where to go.
How does it know where to go?
Well, first off, when someone dies, their Nefesh, when it leaves the body, we'll speak about it next week, but it goes through a cleansing process, but then it returns as a new baby. And it goes through the 20 years of childhood to maturity, learning different sets of rules, different cultures, because it's 100 years later. Or it's a, you know, across the world. Last lifetime she was in Mexico, and this lifetime she's in Siberia. Different places, different culture, different aspects. All of these are about the life lessons.
If I die and reincarnate, then how come I don't get it if it was mine in the past life?
Because the law is that the nefesh cannot come back with the same ruach in this. That's the law. Why is the law that way is a different question. Either next week, or maybe I don't even know the answer to that question. Tomorrow night, the class is going to be on the letters around Tiferet, the letters of that connect the Sphira of Tiferet to all of the other Sephirot that they connect to. I think you'll enjoy the class. It starts at 10 p.m. I highly recommend you call in to the conference call. And Thursday, I may be a little late, no later than 10:10 or 10:15, in starting the class in Zohar. I have an errand to do that might bring me home a little late, but I should be on time, and hopefully it will start at 10. If I do start late, I will still finish at 11. Are there any questions before we sign off for tonight? Shalom, you all, and hopefully we'll speak to you tomorrow.